All right, welcome everyone. I would like to call to order the September 6th Oro Valley Planning and Zoning Commission regular session meeting. Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call for us?
Commissioner Bergsma? Vice Chair Harrington?
Here.
Commissioner Outlaw Ryan, who is also on Zoom. Commissioner Posey?
Oh. Here.
Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
And Chair Gamble?
Here.
And Commissioner Nichols is excused. Let the record show we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Welcome, everyone. A couple of housekeeping. Oh, actually, let's do the Pledge of Allegiance first, if you'd all stand and join me. All right, thank you. And for those of us that are here, just so you know, if you need to go to the bathroom or if you'd like to get a drink of water, if you exit out the doors and go to your right, there are restrooms and a water fountain out there. I would like to start and do our call to the audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask the town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. In order to speak during call to the audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing the blue speaker card. And I do not have any blue speaker cards, so I will close the call to the audience. I'd now like to turn the time over to Vice Mayor Barrett for our council liaison comments.
Thank you. The council's been on its August break, but we haven't been really taking a vacation. We all just returned from the League of Cities and Towns conference up in Phoenix, Arizona, where we learned a lot and had an opportunity to represent Oro Valley there. So that was a great opportunity. On our next meeting tomorrow night, we'll hear the Naranja Trails subdivision that was heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And that's it for now. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right. I'd like to move on to our regular session agenda. Ms. Ancona, will you please read out our first agenda item?
Review and approval of the August 4th, 2022 special session meeting minutes.
All right, thank you. If I could get a motion for approval.
I make a motion that we approve.
Second?
Second.
All right, I will now, how do we want to do this with the, are we still having technical difficulties with the people on Zoom hearing us? Okay.
Chair Gamble, we do have a quorum present here, so okay. You can currently vote on those matters. It is unfortunate that we're having the technical difficulties okay. And the others are unable to attend right now.
All right. Thank you. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Meeting minutes are approved. Ms. Ancona, will you please read out the second agenda item?
Discussion and possible action on a request for conceptual model home architecture approval for the Tranquillo at Rancho Vistoso residential subdivision located approximately 1 mile northeast of the Tangerine Road and Rancho Vistoso Boulevard intersection, 2200588.
All right, thank you. I'd like to turn the time over to Mrs. Oden from the Oro Valley Planning and Zoning staff.
All right, thank you, Chair Gamble. Good evening, members of the commission. My name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the town of Oro Valley. So the purpose of this case is to consider conceptual model home architecture for the Tranquilo at Rancho Vistoso residential subdivision. The applicant, Pulte Homes, is proposing 11 single-story models with three elevations each. The proposed homes incorporate transitional Spanish, transitional territorial, and desert contemporary architectural styles. So this case is presented for discussion and possible action tonight. Just as a reminder to the commission, the focus of this case is on the architectural design only. So to orient ourselves, the subject property, which is outlined in yellow on the left-hand side of the slide, is located west of Oracle Road and south of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard. It's adjacent to the Big Wash Trailhead and in the Big Wash area. On the right side of the slide is the approved site design, just for context. So this slide shows the front elevations of three of the models with varying architectural styles. The applicant has included varied roof lines, covered entryways, varied wall planes, and exterior stone to enhance these facades. There was a condition of approval from a 2017 rezoning that roof colors must be desert earth tones to blend in with the surrounding environment, and the proposed architecture does meet this condition. So this slide shows the side, a left elevation and a rear elevation of two of the models. The applicant has included varied roof lines, window framing, and trim to articulate these facades. On the left elevation, you can also see the side entry garage, and the models also do incorporate optional windows and optional rear extensions on the homes. This slide shows the photos of surrounding development that are nearby the subdivision. The proposed architecture uses similar elements as the surrounding subdivision, such as colors, exterior stone veneer, and decorative elements such as corbels. So the proposed architecture is similar to and complements the surrounding community. So in summary, the proposed architecture is consistent with the design principles and the design standards of the zoning code, and staff recommends approval. So this concludes my presentation, and the applicant is here tonight to present additional details about the architecture. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. I will turn the time over to the applicant.
Thank you very much. Hi, my name is Greg Hemmerlin with Pulte Homes. Here to present our home product for Tranquilo at Rancho Vistoso, also known as, for marketing purposes, Vistoso Canyon Estates. There are three series of products that we're proposing, 4,000 series, 99 lots, 50 by 120, 5,000 series, 74 lots, 60 by 125, 5,500 series, 54 lots at 70 by 125, for a total of 227 lots. It's part of the Rancho Vistoso Master Plan community. It is a gated community, and all lots back to open space. And as we saw earlier, there's a site plan for reference. The proposed product, we have 10 plans. There's the 4,000 series has four plans, 5,000 series, three plans, 5,500 series, three plans, three elevation styles, transitional Spanish, transitional territorial, and desert contemporary. Transitional Spanish has a combination of gable roof elements, decorative wing walls, a concrete S-tile roof, and decorative tile vents. The transitional territorial, elevation B, is mainly gable roof elements, decorative corbels and brackets, concrete shake tile roof, and stucco score lines for the transitional style. The third elevation, elevation C, is desert contemporary. It's all hip roof elements, concrete slate tile roof, stucco score lines as well. More of a horizontal look on this one. And the standard cultured limestone material. I apologize for not advancing the slide there. Uh, First plan and light up 4018-8, 1841 square feet, two bedroom, two bath, 2.5 car garage, optional 2-foot extension at rear of house. I believe all the plans have that. We'll see that as we go through. And like this plan here, majority of them have 2 and 4 foot garage extensions. We like to offer those to the homeowners. It's both of those options, the garage extension and the extensions at the rear of house are popular common options for buyers, so we try to offer those as much as we can where they fit on the lots. Second plan in the lineup here, 4019-8, 1993 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2.5 car garage, optional 2-foot extension, and an optional extended patio. 4020-8, 2006 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2.5 car garage, optional 2-foot extension, 2 and 4 foot garage extension options. 4022-8, 2271 square feet, 4-bedroom, 3-bath, 2-car garage, optional 2-foot extension, and 2 and 4 foot garage extensions. The first plan in the 5000 series is the 5022-8, 2261 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 2-car garage, optional 2-foot extension, 2 and 4 foot garage extension, and there's also an optional side-loaded garage up front on the lower right, as well as a guest suite, so they occupy the same space. Those options are not, we wouldn't allow the 2 and 4 foot extension due to with the garage, side-load garage, due to the access to that side-load garage. So there are restrictions in cases like that for option combinations. The 4524-8 is 2450 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 2.5 car garage, and it has the 2-foot extension at rear, 2 and 4 foot garage extensions. 5025-8, 2582 square feet, 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 2-car garage, 2-foot extension at rear, 2 and 4 foot garage extensions. And this one has the side load and the guest suite option as well. 5526-8 is 2669 square feet, 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 3-car garage. It has an optional 2-foot garage extension, 2 and 4 foot garage extension, extension rear of house, guest suite, and a breezeway option leading into the courtyard. 5528-8, 2860 square feet, 4-bedroom, 3.5 bath, 3-car garage with the 2-car front load, single car side load, optional 2-foot extension, and the optional guest suite, which occupies the space of the side load garage. The largest plan here is 5532-8, 3148 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath, 3-car garage, optional 2-foot extension, and optional guest suite. And just, I included all the elevations so we could just breeze through them. I believe they're all in your packet as well. It's 5,000 series. So the 4,000 is 40 foot wide typically, the 5,000 are 50 foot wide. 5,500 series is 55. This particular plan, the 4524-8, is 45 feet wide. So it gives you a little, if it's a typical lot with a 5-yard or 5-foot side yard setback, it gives you a little more space. That's a really popular plan. That's why I included it here. 5500 series. One thing I will point out is the material that's on elevation C looks really light. That is a material that we submitted and proposed initially, but we couldn't prove that it met the LRV requirements, so we found a substitute material that does meet the LRV requirements, and that's in the final package. Some neighboring properties, The left one here is Rancho Vistoso by Pulte Homes, which I believe is sold out now. The other one to the right Estates at Capello. And then I included our Ironwood Estates. Those are 5,500 series homes. If you recall, that project was submitted and approved last year, and currently the models are under construction. That subdivision has four plans, 5,500 series, and three of the plans that are in this community are the same plans. And then the Village at Silverhawk by Meritage Homes. And then the last item here is the colors and materials. So we chose really try to get the deserty earth tones, the darker tones that are out here in the area, and corresponding roof tiles to work with those. We have an in-house designer that does all our color and material selection. So elevation A, as I mentioned, is the S-tile roof. Elevation B is the shake. Elevation C has the slate. And then it's the Westlake cast fit is the stone material.
If I may, Chair, I'm very sorry to interrupt. Just really wanted to ask if you could speak into the microphone so that folks online can hear you.
Oh, I apologize.
No worries. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, thank you.
That concludes my presentation. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. I am going to open up the discussion to commissioners.
Yes.
Commissioner Brinksma.
One of the things that I was kind of concerned about is your front elevations. The garage is on the left-hand side throughout all of them.
Yes, sir.
Do you plan to alternate them?
Yes. So we, for the purpose of, I guess, our working drawings, our CAD files production, you know, drawings, we draw them on the left-hand side. Pulte is a national builder, and we leverage different floor plans across the country. The rule set is to have the garage on the left-hand side, so if they need to mirror it, they can easily mirror it to the right. So it makes it, because some of the divisions that we share plans with produce a plan for every house they build, like in Seattle, for example. So they'll flip the garage left and right. But we design the subdivision so that typically the garage is on the side of the utilities, which is the most efficient straight run. So, and this whole subdivision's designed around, you know, utility locations, and there will be left right garage orientations.
The other question I had is with your color palette. You are going to have different colors for each one of the houses next to each other. You're not
going
to have the same
yes,
color.
Sir.
Is that how? So how do you pick it between A, B, and C? And is that like the houses will be A, B, C, and then A, B, C again? Or how do you do that? Is that the new buyer
that would pick the color? It's really, so if it's a buyer, if it's the first buyer in the community and there's no other homes or any other, I guess, conditions where we would need to, we're not going to build the same elevation next to each other, same plan elevation next to each other, and that goes as well as the color scheme. So elevation A color schemes, there's three to choose from. So if we had the same plan, different elevation next to each other, the first buyer could select, say, color scheme one. Second buyer, they wouldn't be able to choose elevation A with color scheme one. They'd have to pick another one of the other two.
Thank you.
And then for specs, we select typically the ones that are, I guess, most common once we get into the community. You're welcome.
Chair Gamble.
Yes. Commissioner Posey.
Yeah. I just wanted to, I'm assuming the windows are energy efficient.
Yes.
But I just wanted clarification on that.
The specifications, I can get.
Okay.
I can provide that.
I just want to make sure that, you know.
Low E. Oh, yeah, they're definitely low E windows. Very
okay.
energy efficient.
All right. Do you know who your contractor will be?
For the windows?
Your contractor.
I do not. Oh, for the window?
Yes.
No, but I can find out.
That's fine. Thank you.
I think we've elected them.
Okay. Vice Chair Harrington.
I've got a question about your brickwork on elevation C. Is it, are you not doing any on A or B, just only on
Correct.
C?
Elevation C.
Is there a reason why just only on C?
That's the style that we opted to go with. That those styles typically don't have the stone with it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, did we have any other comments from commissioners? No? All right. Then I will ask for a motion.
Yes, Chair Gamble. I move to approve the conceptual model home architecture for the proposed 11 model homes for Tranquillo at Rancho Vistoso based on the finding that the request complies with design principles and design standards of the zoning code.
All right, thank you. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? All right, that motion passes. Ms. Ancona, will you please read our second agenda item, or a third agenda item?
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding proposed code amendments to revise the development review process, Chapter 22, and other related sections of the zoning code.
All right, thank you. I'd now like to turn the time over to Ms. Sims for the staff presentation.
All right, thank you, Chair Gamble and commissioners. My name is Melini Sims. I'm a principal planner with the town of Oro Valley. So our purpose tonight is to discuss proposed code amendments to change solely processes and other improvements to close gaps and align the code with state law. These proposed changes were discussed with the commission back in March. And so I will tonight be walking us back through some of the key elements of those proposed changes. Also, I will be addressing the questions and comments we received back in March and sharing any new information or changes that have happened since the study session. We are presenting this code amendment for discussion and recommendation from the Commission to Town Council this evening. So the proposed code changes aim to achieve the following key items. First, to increase efficiency by consolidating duplicative staff reviews within the development review process. Second is to reduce confusion for developers, residents, and decision makers by using industry terms and closing some gaps. Third is to remove outdated processes or any conflicts with state law. And by doing all these process changes, we are making sure to maintain effective public participation, and we are not making any changes to the Oro Valley's high-quality design standards. So I'm now going to walk through each of these points. So first, the main change that we are proposing is to the development review process. So development review is applicable to all non-residential and residential projects that are developing within their existing zoning rights. Development review largely includes site design, landscape design, building exterior, like model home architecture, as well as public art and signage. So an example of a project going through development review is the Naranja Trail subdivision that the commission considered last month. So looking at the existing process, there's three steps to it. The first is what is known as conceptual design review. And this is where the public participation process starts. Public are invited to participate through neighborhood meetings And the conceptual designs are also considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council. During this first tip, staff also conducts a technical review for code compliance. Now, the second step may be less aware to the public, as it is an entirely staff technical review. The final design review, which is this stage, does include some more details for staff to make sure that it matches the conceptual designs that were approved by council, but also, again, for code compliance. And the third step is a third staff review right before permitting. So, again, we're checking for code compliance before permit issuance. Now, the original intent behind this three-step process was to provide an avenue for change. The belief was that resident input would have more impact and change would be more likely to happen if it started when the plans were at a preliminary stage. But as you can see on the screen, what is on the left-hand side is what is conceptual, and what is on the right-hand side is what we see as our final site plans. So on the left-hand side, that is what the commission currently is used to seeing, as well as Town Council. And what you can see, although you can't see the particulars, is the details on both plans are relatively similar. Although a few additional details are on the final site plan, the changes are not significant. Because what we've noticed is that in reality, developers generally need to provide more details up front, especially as the town approaches build-out, to know if a project is feasible and also to address questions from residents and decision-makers. So what the proposed code amendment is aiming to do is not to remove any of the aspects we require, but rather consolidate the plans and receive more of those details up front. And as you can see on the screen, the developers are also already doing so by giving us more details than what one would consider conceptual. So on this screen, this is the proposed change. Again, by consolidating staff reviews, we are maintaining the public participation process. It is not being changed, as there will still be neighborhood meetings as well as opportunities for the public to be involved during the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council meetings. So last March, the commission did ask if staff looked into any other changes within this first process. I do want to mention that other jurisdictions in the region do allow projects that are developing to their existing property rights to not go through a public review process. However, in staff's experience, some projects do improve their designs after receiving public input. So we are not proposing to remove any public input opportunities at this time. Another question from the commission was the utility of a second neighborhood meeting. So the code already has flexibility within it that allows the planning and zoning administrator to waive the second neighborhood meeting or even allow more than two neighborhood meetings, depending on the complexity of a project. And a great example of when a second neighborhood meeting was helpful was the residents at Morning Vista that was considered by the commission. They reconfigured a lot based on a great discussion during that second neighborhood meeting to improve the design. So again, at this time, staff is not recommending any changes to the neighborhood meeting or public participation process. So this image kind of looks at the same process, but we're focused on time savings. So by doing this proposed process, there is a potential to save roughly 6 months of staff and the developers' time. So within the confines of the existing zoning code, developers have already been asking staff for the last year or so if they can combine their final designs and improvement plans into one plan set. By doing so, they've tested out the proposed process that we are discussing tonight, and it has shown that public participation has remained effective, change does still happen, and the amount of details we're receiving still allows us to make sure that the plans are code compliant. And in addition to shortening the review time, the proposed code amendment also reduces confusion. The terms conceptual and final design are unique to Oro Valley. So for those who are developing for the first time here, or even residents who just moved to town, Sometimes there's a learning curve, or it makes the process take a little longer because they're trying to understand our terms. So what the code is proposed code amendment is proposing is to use more common industry terms to the region. So this includes a preliminary plat, which is required when a development needs to subdivide the property, or a master or a development plan, excuse me, which is required for projects developing themselves on a property and no subdivision is required, as also a master development plan. So that is required when a commercial center, an employment center, needs to be planned at once to make sure it's cohesive. The current code does not require a master development plan, so the proposed one as an improvement will require a master development plan when larger tracts of land are being developed at one time. An example of a master development plan is Steam Pump Village. Now, I do want to reiterate that none of these new terms will reduce the types of plans you'll receive or the commission will be considering. So we will still get site, landscape, recreation area designs under all of these new terms. And also some new information for the commission to consider tonight is we added parameters for temporary real estate offices. So temporary real estate offices are used in most subdivisions, generally in the model home or as offices within the new subdivision, to sell the homes. Currently, a developer can have a temporary real estate office for 2 years. After the 2 years, they have to ask for an extension for another 2 years that can be approved by the planning and zoning administrator. However, the current code doesn't specify how many extensions they can have. Therefore, the proposed code amendment aims to clarify this and close this gap by specifying that a temporary real estate office can operate still for the initial 2 years. They can then ask for one extension for 2 years to be approved by the planning and zoning administrator, but a subsequent extension must be approved by town council. And in total, it will restrict temporary real estate offices to operate for a total of 6 years. So they can't, they're meeting the intent of temporary. Some additional clarification that we wanted to include was any changes to architecture designs. So right now, if there's a change of 25% or more to architecture that was approved by the commission or council, they must come back to the commission or council. But the proposed code clarifies what that 25% means. So what we're really looking at is if it's 25% more of a change to a building facade, so if it's a non-residential building, or the number of models, that's when they would come back to commission or council. Some additional criteria that we're including with the code amendment is making sure that whatever is the proposed change must still comply to the same extent that the originally approved design did to the design standards and principles, and it also must not impact compatibility or streetscapes or adjacent properties as well. Or it would need to come back for council or commission consideration. So lastly, the proposed code amendment removes other outdated processes or conflicts with state law. So first, a sign criteria provides a code-compliant sign design for a center or where there's multiple tenants. Individual businesses proposing a code-compliant sign can acquire a sign permit that is approved by staff. Yet when the code-compliant design for a center is required, it requires Planning and Zoning Commission approval. So sign criteria do not require neighborhood meetings, and from staff's experience, the public has also not shown up to Planning and Zoning Commission meetings with any comments. Additionally, since this process was established, the design standards and principles for signs were adopted, and that has resulted in high-quality sign designs that the commission either approves or approves with little changes. So an example of a sign criteria is the Linda Vista Luxury Rentals and Commercial Area sign, which is shown on the screen, and this was considered by the commission, I believe, last month as well. Now the final process changes are related to removing any conflicts with state law. So during this last legislative period, the state legislator passed a law changing the filing time for a Type 1 general plan amendment. So a general plan is a living document that may be amended from time to time, and Type 1 general plan amendments are those that are more significant. Previously, they had to be filed by April 30th to be considered by council within the same calendar year. But what will be effective on September 23rd is that Type 1 general plan amendments can be filed at any time throughout the year, which and must just be considered within 12 months of when they were filed. Now, the last change is also with regard to the general plan. So the zoning code currently requires the town to conduct a survey of all parcels with zoning in conflict with their land use. However, it also takes a step further, requiring the town to take action, such as rezoning private property to make it match with the land use. The trouble with this is with Proposition 207, which was also passed after this code was adopted, provides a liability for the town if they were to rezone private property. Now, during the last commission study session, it was asked how many conflicts there are. There are roughly 52 conflicts, but I do want to mention that most of these conflicts are developed, or they are schools, parks, government facilities, and churches, which are allowed in every zoning district. So the proposed code amendment aims to remove the requirement that the town take action, and instead we conduct this inventory during the 10-year general plan update, which is really a more applicable time. So during the Your Voice, Our Future update, an inventory was also conducted to look at the changes, and some land use changes were made, but most were deferred to the public review process, which is also an applicable time to do land use changes. The commission also asked, why don't we do it in reverse? And why don't we change the land use to match the zoning so we're not having a liability problem with taking away property rights? So the reason staff doesn't recommend that is because the land use is really the town's vision for the future to create a complete community, and oftentimes this doesn't match the zoning in some instances. So again, the time to really look at land use changes is during that general plan update when the town, the voters ratify the general plan. So the process changes I just discussed do maintain an effective public participation process. Again, it was field tested within the confines of the zoning to show that there was no reduction of the type of plans required or the level of impact residents can have on development. And again, there also are no changes to Oro Valley's design standards. They will all be maintained, and the information reviewed by staff is also being maintained to ensure that those are upheld. And as with any code amendment, we look to the general plan for guidance. The proposed code amendment meets the goals and policies related to public input by, again, requiring more information up front to address residents' questions, and also maintaining all the opportunities for the public to be involved. And additionally, the code amendment, since it's focused on process, not changing the design standards, it still upholds many of the guiding principles you see on the screen. Lastly, the proposed amendment is supported by the Town Council's strategic leadership plan, objective to be more business friendly. Again, many developers have already asked for this process within the confines of the zoning. So the development process changes are really to adapt with what they are already asking for. In summary, the biggest change is to the development review process, which has been field tested and aims to shorten the process, but maintaining public input. The other changes are to reduce confusion and close gaps and also remove any conflicts with state law. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Sims. I am going to open the public hearing for this. We did not have any blue cards come in or any questions, so I will close the public hearing, and I will open everything up to commissioner discussion. I just wanted to reach out to Commissioner Bergsma. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Did you have comments?
I do, actually.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess the first question goes back to the map showing inconsistencies between zoning and the plan designations. Could you go back to that map real quickly?
Yes.
Are you seeing it?
Yes, I see it fine. So could you explain the yellow areas up in the Rancho Vistoso area? What's that all about?
Sure.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. So many of those yellow areas, the density is actually pretty accurate to what is in the general plan. They're zoned medium density residential, which is what the general plan has. The main difference is some of those areas also have open space as a land use. But I want to clarify that the difference there is the open space is protected through the plats. So it's just not zoned open space, but it's all common area that cannot be built upon either.
Okay, thank you. I did have a couple other comments, if I can take the time. The first relates to page 21 of the ordinance, and I can find it here. So that's table 22.9B, DRC authorities, which lists departments or agencies that might be involved in the development review process. At the staff level. The one suggestion I have is, and maybe you consider this and didn't include it for some reason, is that maybe you should have staff from Parks and Recreation involved in this, especially for developments, residential developments. And, you know, obviously it's going to be the focus of the next agenda item, but it seems to me that they should be involved, at least in the review of some development applications.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma, staff agrees, and we will definitely add Parks and Recreation Department to the development review authorities.
Great, thank you. And then the other final comment is relating to page 24 of the ordinance. And by the way, for those who, well, I don't think many people are observing right now, but there's 117 pages in this ordinance, so it's a lot to absorb. But page 24... I guess the question is the table that precedes that, which gets into approval authorities, list who the final approval authority is. In a lot of cases, it's the council, but in a few cases, it's staff or it's the planning commission, planning and zoning commission. And in those cases, there is an appeal process usually to the council, and what I'm reading in section, let me get the right reference here. Let's see, there, I believe the text indicates that appeals can only be filed by the applicant. Are there any cases where there's an opportunity for public input in the process, and which would also allow for people affected in the neighborhood to appeal?
Chair Gamble, Member Bergsma, this is Joe Andrews. We are now running straight into Arizona Revised Statute 12-1134, affectionately called Proposition 207. And if we have the neighbors appealing a property issue and devaluing somebody's land in a town process, then the town could be responsible for having to pay for the difference if that is actually made effectual later. Arizona's laws are not really all that favorable to neighbors. I really apologize for that, but that's how they're set up. The owner has most of the rights.
Obviously, no apology required. It's not your fault, but The one I'm thinking about is, for example, the alternative parking ratio, where you can reduce the amount of parking, or maybe home occupations, especially the type two. There's no inherent right to do those things. So it seems to me that there might be an opportunity for appeal by somebody other than the applicant.
We're just looking that up real quick. Did that still fall under Prop 207? Where it's conflicting with owners' rights?
Chair Gamble, members of the commission, it comes down to the same problem. I understand it's not an inherent right, but we're inserting someone into the process to appeal the town's, it sounds like in this instance, maybe even approval of something. They could then appeal that decision and then have it overturned, and then someone can say that they essentially lost something based on that appeal. Arizona's laws on land use are really protected that way, and it's not a good idea to have somebody be able to, as a neighbor, appeal your decision. Now, there are sections where that occurs. If somebody comes in for a variance, neighbors can actually appeal that because that's a different animal. That's a quasi-judicial action. This is not a variance. This is somebody that has the ability to ask for a certain use, be it a type 1 or type 2, home occupation, and having the neighbors be able to attack that is not recommended legally.
Does that partially answer your question, Commissioner Bergsma?
Partially. I guess the follow-up question then would be, and I can't recall this, in either of those cases, is there any opportunity for public input in the first place?
Commissioner Bergsma, so type 2 home occupations are presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission. So there is opportunity there. If somebody wanted to show up and speak, they could.
Would that go for the reduction in parking as well?
So Commissioner Bergsma, during the parking code update, so some reductions are administratively approvable. It's less than or more than, no. It's a 20%. And anything over that does require commission consideration, which again is a public meeting that the public can attend and speak at.
Okay.
And if I may add, Commissioner Bergsman, hopefully this doesn't confuse things further. Any administrative decision by the planning and zoning administrator may be appealed to the Board of Adjustment per state law. And the party really needs to establish that they're aggrieved by that decision. So there is a built-in code process and actually state law, statutory explanation that as far as administrative decisions, those are always appealable to the Board of Adjustment. So that's already built in. And there is a section of code that explains what I just described as far as administrative decisions. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I belabored that enough. I'll let others ask questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Bergsma. While we're on the Zoom, Commissioner Ryan, did you have any questions or comments?
Not at this time. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thanks. All right. So, Commissioner Sturman.
Sturman. Thank you, Chair Hamill. Looking at page 20 of 117, and I'm curious about this because it's a matrix chart that talks about the preliminary plat process, but then there's an area called artwork plan. Mm-hmm. And for non-residential, you ask them to have artwork
Maybe there's history here, but I was thinking, with the type of developments that we usually encounter, for example, the Pulte thing that we just looked at, huge complexes, and they always have an entryway and so forth, and they set up a marquee and so forth. Is there any way that we could start kind of looking at this? Because artwork can be very pleasant looking, but we kind of accept, you know, what the builder developer does. And I was just thinking artwork, you know, would really be appealing. But maybe there's history here that I'm not conscious of.
And yes, Mr. Fella may have more of the history of why it was applied to non-residential development.
Or not. I do recall that, you know, that that code was adopted just prior to me coming on board in 1999. It was specifically applied to non-residential only, commercial, 1% of construction costs. Because if you think about it, non-residential uses, those are areas that people gather, both residents and people from afar, and so they are gathering areas, so commercial shopping centers and whatnot. So that was the focus rationale in applying that to non-residential. As far as residential and subdivisions, obviously it has not been applied. Folks do, as you've seen in Ranch Vista, feel like they do out of their way. Developers, it's in their interest to put quality monumentation in the front of their subdivisions. So I hope that helps provide a little background.
Well, what I found for, you know, Rancho Vistoso, yes, they put the marquees up, but they're pretty austere, and I call them meager, too. And I just think that, Oro Valley, really, with the Planning and Zoning Commission that we have, and also the planning staff, which recently just received an award for the Sorrows. Thank you so much. That I just think these marquees need to be updated, and I think that if we have an opportunity, you know, for new development, that we ought to at least get some support or some encouragement for the builders to look at some artwork, you know, that would be more attractive than just a name of the section. Thank you.
All right. Other commissioners, questions? Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Yes. I don't know how I could put this, but the process for which the development, the process, mm-hmm. the steps.
I can go back to that slide real quick. The existing or proposed?
This one right here. Thank you. Perfect. Yes. Okay. The last step, the very last step, is a grading permit issuance. Okay. And I just feel like that could step be maybe taken out and put closer to when the development would begin. So, because you know the dust and the all of the animals and stuff disturbed, and I'm just wondering if that could be taken out and put in another spot before the development, and then have a timeline there.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, correct me if I don't answer your question. So there is within the proposed code amendment, and actually was carried over from what's existing, that site plan approval or preliminary plat approval will expire after 2 years. So if a developer gets approval, they're encouraged to start construction. And if they don't, they can't get a grading permit if it's outside of 2 years. They would need to go back to the commission and council to get approval with that. So I'm not sure if that addresses your concern. And I apologize, I may have misheard.
Yes, it does. Okay, so they get a second approval. Is there any, how many approvals can they get?
They could also file, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, they can file for extensions as well, and that goes to council.
And if I may, Ms. Posey, that Commissioner Posey, that step three is really go time for a developer in terms of wanting to construct. So typically, once those construction plans are in, they have their financing locked in, they are in, they're really pressing on us to get things moving because they want to get out and moving. So once the dirt starts moving after a grading permit is issued, there are a whole series of inspections to make sure that the site is stabilized. There's dust control, stormwater issues in terms of runoff are all addressed. And typically, not in every case, typically building permits come very soon after grading permit. There are notable exceptions out there, and the most community well-understood one is La Posada, Nokomis Sky, where they received their grading permits. They submitted 4 or 5 years ago, maybe it's about 6 years ago, they submitted building permits soon thereafter. The market went in a direction that was not favorable to them, and they decided not to build. So the site has been sitting vacant. Thankfully, that is an anomaly for Oro Valley. And in the meantime, through bonds and other requirements, they've had to stabilize the site and hydroseed and plant the plantings on the site. They are back in for building permits right now as we speak. So there are examples out there, just wanted to be clear, that where there's a gap, but that is an anomaly relative to what we normally see in terms of building in Oro Valley.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Gamble, members of the commission, one more thing. The state of Arizona has a section of law called the Regulatory Bill of Rights, and that runs against the government as well. Essentially, if they qualify for a permit, we have to really turn that around and grant that permit. If we don't, and we don't do it in the amount of time statutorily suggested, then we can end up paying damages to those individuals whose permits we've not issued. So if they qualify for a grading permit, they're allowed to apply for it. We have to grant it in a rational amount of time, and they grade. We can do everything we can to try to encourage the building as soon thereafter as possible, but nobody could predict a recession, a big bad one that causes them to grade and then not build, or what happened to La Posada.
Thank you.
Thank you. I got one more.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was just in another thing. I was looking at the net right now, currently, that it is required that you have a neighborhood meeting when you put up signage, right? So that's requirement right now. And you're proposing?
No. So Commissioner Gamble, or Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, no. So right now, a sign criteria does not require a neighborhood meeting.
Thank you.
All right. Did we have any other comments or discussion points for commissioners? I was really happy with the consolidation and being able to reduce just the time it takes. I know you always hear, like, we're not that business friendly, but so I always like when we're taking steps in the right direction, and I love how this is combining kind of the first and second steps, and it gives us more information on the front end too. So with those were my thoughts on that. And with that, I will ask for a recommendation or a motion.
Madam Chair.
I move to recommend approval of the proposed zoning code text amendments to revise the development review process, Chapter 22, and the other related sections based on the findings it is in a conformance with the general plan and the recommendations that were cited by several commissioners, such as adding the recreational department to the review process,
a second?
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Sorry,
hold on.
Really sorry to interrupt. Really just want to make sure that the motion is super clear. What I heard was definitely add Parks and Rec to the table as far as review. But I also heard other commissioners' comments. Was the list add one thing, or was it adding several things as far as conditions? I just want to be able to interpret the motion. Could you help perhaps clarify the motion so that we can implement it?
Well, my comment regarding artwork was mainly a comment for further study. It was not a complete recommendation as such, because I think that needed to be evaluated further with not knowing all the history. But I thought that one of the comments about about adding the recreational department review process, I think, was more than valid. And that was the only one that I thought was credible.
Okay, so we're just adding that Parks and Rec be looped in?
Correct.
Okay.
Did the seconder of the motion understand that that was what you were seconding?
Yes.
Well, the seconder, I think, was our vice mayor.
Yes, okay. I did understand
so
that.
So now it's time, I think, for you all to vote after you were interrupted by Mr. Villa, so we knew what you were doing.
All right. So all those in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Sounds like that
was 6-6.
Were
there any opposed?
Are there any opposed? I heard everybody say aye. Oh. I even heard the two Zoom ones. So. All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Sims. Ms. Ancona, will you please read the fourth agenda item for us?
Presentation and discussion regarding potential town code amendments to private recreation area amenity and lieu fee opportunities and other related requirements for residential subdivisions, multifamily projects, and mixed-use developments.
All right, thank you. I will turn the time over to Ms. Oden for the staff presentation.
All right, thank you, Chair Gamble, and good evening again, commissioners. So just to start, I do want to make it clear that the focus of this presentation and these proposed code amendments are on private recreation areas. So an example of this is what's shown on the screen in front of you. So this is an example of a private park, recreation area that's usually associated with new private subdivisions. And this is just an example of one in Oro Valley. So just wanted to start that off just to narrow in the focus. So really the purpose why we're here tonight with this presentation, these proposed code changes, it really stems from the Oro Valley Parks and Needs Recreation Needs Assessment and Associated Master Plan. And these were released in 2020 and 2021. And a key finding of these reports and these studies was that there is a need for larger parks in Oro Valley. There are a lot of smaller parks. They're referred to as mini parks in the Master Plan and Needs Assessment. And those are parks that are defined as those that are smaller than 3 acres. So based on these findings, Town Council did adopt an objective in their strategic leadership plan. And the strategic leadership plan, or you might hear me refer to it as the SLP, that is a guiding document based on the goals and policies of the general plan. But the actual objective is shown in italics on the screen, but essentially it was a directive to planning staff to review existing zoning code standards and look at opportunities to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks and amenities as outlined in the Parks and Recreation Needs Assessment. So really our charge as planning staff was to look at the zoning code and look at opportunities to meet this SLP objective for private parks. So tonight I'm going to go over key findings and propose solutions and recommendations to meet this SLP objective. And this is presented tonight for discussion and feedback. There's no action being taken. We are looking forward to any questions and, of course, the feedback from the Planning and Zoning Commission. So really where we are in the overall process. So as staff, we've already done a lot of research and identification of key issues and potential solutions, again, to meet that SLP objective. We have taken this to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, or PRAB for short, for their feedback to these potential zoning code changes, and that happened last month. Tonight, we are, of course, here to present the proposed recommendations to the Planning and Zoning Commission. I want to make it clear, as staff, we actually haven't started any code drafting yet. We wanted to get feedback from both PRAB and the Planning Commission before we started drafting, you know, the nuts and bolts of the language and the code. But once that's done, we'll come back to PRAB for a recommendation, which will be, and present those actual zoning code changes to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And ultimately, those changes will be presented to Town Council for consideration. So I mentioned earlier, we have done a good amount of research as part of this code amendment. And we've, of course, looked at our own Oro Valley zoning code, looking at areas that might be working well to meet that SLP objective or areas where there was opportunity to change those zoning code standards. We looked at the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Needs Assessment and Master Plan, as that was really the impetus for these proposed code changes. We also looked at a slew of Arizona jurisdictions, all the way from southern Arizona up to northern Arizona and Flagstaff, looking at what those jurisdictions required for their private recreation area size and amenity requirements, as well as an actual amenity inventory and what was actually built on the ground, both in Oro Valley and other jurisdictions as well. We also looked at the Trust for Public Land, just for best practices as far as accessibility to private parks. We had a lot of discussion and feedback with PROS Consulting, and that was the consulting firm that was charged with creating the needs assessment and master plan, as well as the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Director. And we've also had initial discussion with home builders, as they're an important stakeholder. So this is just a summary of the key findings that I'm going to hit during my presentation. And I'll go over all of these in more detail in the following slides. But the first finding has to do with consolidation of private recreation areas. The second finding has to do really with the minimum size that a park, what we found that a park has to be to have amenity and space value, and in-lieu fee options are also incorporated into that. The third finding has to do with the required private recreation area size based on dwelling unit count. The fourth finding covers amenity requirements. And the fifth finding covers multifamily residential amenities and also simplifying the recreation area requirement in terms of size. So the first finding, again, has to do with consolidation of private recreation spaces. So looking at the existing town zoning code, and really what we found, again, thinking towards meeting that SLP objective, is that there's really no mechanism in the existing code to consolidate private park areas. And this can sometimes result in smaller and more scattered parks and subdivisions. So an example of this is in the middle of the screen, kind of that black and white site plan. So that's the Villages at Silverhawk residential subdivision. And if you can see the four stars in that image, those are actually four different recreation areas. This subdivision was developed in three phases, so those recreation areas are spaced in four different places throughout. But this is an example of, you know, sometimes we might see this where there's not really a consolidation of private parks. So based on this finding, we are proposing or recommending a few different changes to the zoning code. So the first one is to have a requirement that would require consolidation of private recreation areas unless there are special circumstances. And what this essentially boils down to is that a required recreation area may not be split up more than twice without special circumstances. So that could be something like topography or access, but that would encourage or would prioritize larger parks simply by limiting the amount of time that the amount a recreation area can be split up. The second proposed change is to require new subdivisions that develop adjacent to each other to share recreation areas. So an example of this is actually shown on the far right side of the slide. This is the Altera and Valley Vista subdivisions. Those are located east of Rancho Vistosa Boulevard along the new Moore Loop Road connection. So you can kind of see in between the middle of those developments, there is a blue circle. So that's an example of two subdivisions that developed adjacent to each other and actually share a larger recreation area between those two developments. So this, what this might look like is instead of, you know, if two subdivisions have a half-acre requirement, instead of having two separate half-acres serving separate subdivisions, there would be 1 acre shared park. And the third recommendation is that private recreation areas should be no more than a half mile or 10-minute walk from all residents. And this is actually best practice from the Trust for Public Lands that I mentioned earlier. Essentially, this is just to ensure that these parks are accessible to residents, that they don't need to get in their car to get to their neighborhood park, that they're able to walk or bike, basically get there without a vehicle. So overall, these proposed changes, they do support that SLP objective by prioritizing larger parks. So the second finding really has to do with the size, the minimum size a private recreation area has to be, what we found, for there still to be good amenity and space value. So just a little bit of background on the research that went into this specific finding is we actually took the whole inventory of all the mini parks that were included in the needs assessment and actually looked at other Arizona jurisdictions as well. But we, using aerial imagery and Google Street View, we basically took an inventory of the amenities that were provided in these existing parks. And what we found is that, you know, the larger the parks, the more space there is for more meaningful amenities like basketball courts or swimming pools, volleyball courts, larger turf areas, things like that. So essentially, yeah, in the smaller parks, you know, there's just limited amenity and space value the smaller you get. So our finding essentially was that private parks that are smaller than a quarter of an acre, they do have lower recreational value than parks that are larger than a quarter of an acre. An example, if you go to the right-hand side of the slide, the top image, that's an example of a park that's it's a little less than an acre. There are some putting greens on there, but not much else. So there's not a huge diversity of things at that park. There's not a whole lot of amenity value at that specific recreation area. The image on the bottom of the slide to the right, that's a park that is just over a quarter of an acre. And there's a lot going on there. There's a half basketball court, a shaded ramada, turf area, and shaded playground as well. So that was just an example of a park that's greater than a quarter of an acre, but that has a lot of amenity value. So to address this finding, as staff, we're proposing a couple recommendations to the code. So the first one is that private parks that are smaller than a quarter of an acre must pay an in-lieu fee, which would be used to support public parks. And an in-lieu fee is a fee that's paid to the Parks and Recreation Department. It's based on the value of the land and cost of amenities, and that is paid to either build new public parks or to maintain existing public park facilities. So this recommendation would ensure that, you know, we don't end up with something that's just really, really small in a smaller subdivision that just doesn't have amenity or space value. The second recommendation is that private parks that are greater than a quarter of an acre, they still must provide recreational area, but there are limited opportunities to use an in-lieu fee, which is subject to town council approval. The developer would still have to demonstrate that they can either provide or that there is existing access to an existing public park to take advantage of that in-lieu fee option. Essentially, this just creates greater flexibility with the in-lieu fee option in the zoning code. Currently, it's pretty strict when developers can use that in-lieu fee option, so this just opens it up, creates greater flexibility. And again, with the in-lieu fee option, it's not an all or none. There can be partial in-lieu fees as well. So the third finding has to do with the required recreation area size. So we looked at lots of jurisdictions in Arizona, just to see what those jurisdictions required in new subdivisions for their recreation area. Oro Valley currently requires 1 acre per 85 dwelling units for new subdivisions. And what we found is that Oro Valley's recreation area requirement is low compared to some, not all, but some other Arizona jurisdictions. So on the right-hand side of the slide, that is a comparison of some southern Arizona jurisdictions. And as you can see, Oro Valley is kind of right in the middle there. Pima County, just their base requirement is 1.7 acres per 85 dwelling units. Again, Oro Valley is in the middle at 1 acre per 85 dwelling units. And the city of Tucson actually does not require new recreation area and developments. Not that developers don't put that in, but that would be on the lower end of the spectrum. So kind of to address this finding, we're proposing a couple things for this specific finding. The first is actually for developments that do not, that are not requesting a rezoning, so they're developing under their existing entitled residential zoning, we're actually not proposing to change the existing existing standard of 1 acre per 85 dwelling units. And the rationale behind this is that there's the there's not a whole lot of situations currently in town where this would happen, where properties would develop under that existing zoning. So from a planning perspective, it just wasn't really worth it to change that requirement, just because the situations that would arise are very, very few. However, for developments that are requesting a rezoning and new entitlements, we're proposing to require 1.75 acres of recreation area for every 85 dwelling units. So that is a jump from 1 acre per 85 dwelling units. It puts us just above Pima County, so it achieves greater parity with some other southern Arizona jurisdictions. But this would prioritize that SLP objective by, or would help meet that SLP objective by creating opportunities for larger neighborhood parks and new subdivisions. So the next finding has to do with amenity requirements. So the existing zoning code does require amenities in private recreation areas. However, what we found looking through the zoning code and also looking through the inventory that we found of what amenities are actually built on the ground is that there are really no provisions in the zoning code to ensure that there are meaningful amenities in private recreation areas. So an example, if you go to the right-hand side of the slide, the top image, that's an example of a park. It's a pretty good size, but there's only a couple things provided. There's an unshaded picnic table and a horseshoe pit. So even though the park is, you know, a good size, there's just not a whole lot of amenity value and recreation value in that park. So really to ensure that there are quality amenities provided in parks, again, in line with the SLP objective, first that we are a staff proposing that there are actually minimum amenity types that are provided in all new private recreation areas. So these would be things like shaded seating, ADA access, sidewalks. So every park is going to have these minimum amenities. And then the second recommendation, what we did for the second recommendation is we looked through our code and basically recategorized the amenities that we have currently in our code. So we really looked at, well, what are the most meaningful amenities? You know, think larger items or larger amenities such as basketball courts, pickleball courts, large shaded play structures. So we recategorized what's already in the code. So we're proposing that for every half acre of private recreation area, one active and one additional amenity must be provided. So an example of active and additional amenities are provided in the table on that slide. So an active amenity, those are things that we recategorize as really those larger, more meaningful amenities. So again, basketball courts, swimming pools, large shaded play structures. And additional amenities might be things that are a little bit smaller. I mean, they still have value, but they're not to the, you know, to the level of an active amenity. So these are things like a smaller turf area, a small standalone play structure, horseshoe pit, those types of amenities. And at the lower image on the right side of the slide, that's just an example of, a park that has a good amount of amenities, things you might see, you know, a mix of. So there's a small turf area, a half basketball court, shaded ramada, shaded play structure as well. But with these recommendations, they do would lead to more meaningful amenities in private recreation areas. All right, and the last finding has to do with multifamily residential requirements for recreation areas. So similar to what we found in single-family residential subdivisions, we found that that there are no provisions to ensure that there are meaningful amenities in multifamily, like apartment-type developments, and that the existing recreation area requirement for apartment developments is confusing just how it's written in the code. So what we're proposing is actually very similar to the previous slide for multifamily residential developments. Essentially, Those would have the same amenity requirements as single-family residential developments. That's both the minimum amenities and the one active and one additional amenity per half acre. Our second recommendation is essentially a code cleanup item to simplify the existing zoning code language to require just 17% of the development area for apartment developments to be set aside as recreation area. Currently in the code, it's kind of confusing how it's written. It's 50% of the 35% of the open space needs to be recreation area. So this, I do want to make it clear, this does not reduce the amount of recreation area for these developments. It just simplifies it. So it's easier for everyone to understand. All right, and as with any code amendment, we look to the general plan for guidance. So the proposed recommendations do meet the goals and policies of the general plan by supporting larger parks and more meaningful amenities. It does maintain the guiding principle shown on this slide because the recommendations would provide more park area. And as I've discussed, it meets the strategic leadership plan objective by proposing recommendations that support larger parks and more meaningful amenities. And this slide is just a summary of, I know there's a lot of text here, but just a summary of all the findings and the recommendations that I discussed during my presentation. So this does conclude my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions at this time and, of course, looking to feedback that the commission might have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Oden. I'll open this up to commissioner discussion. Commissioner Sterna.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. You know, one of the things that I recall, and I think there was a survey, a park recreational survey that was done 3-4 years ago, and there was 8 areas that they wanted everybody to respond to. And the top two was trails and nature aspects of bicycle trails along with walking trails. When you said in lieu of fees, would that be considered where we would talk about trails being provided and that would be connecting through the housing divisions and so forth?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturman. I think what I meant, are you talking about maybe the access that I had mentioned with the in lieu fee option?
Well, what I was thinking when you were going to say in lieu of fees rather than providing a recreational more than a quarter of an acre, that they would be able to provide you funds to maintain the existing trails that you would have, or that you would have an option, you know, to build a trail that would connect to some other system. And I didn't know if that was considered, because that seemed to be a top priority, is that they wanted more trails and bicycling rather than a concentrated quarter of an acre or more than a quarter of an acre. Now, here's another aspect that we're facing. When you start centralizing larger parks where turf areas are really demanded, we have water conservation issues here. And that means you have to provide a lot of water, you know, and you have to provide overseeding. So I think there needs to be some rethinking on that, are actually considered because of the survey results that were generated 4 or 5 years ago.
If I may, I'm sorry, do you mind if I jump in there? Sorry, you were about to speak and I jumped in. So I think a couple of things in mind, to keep in mind. So trails are required outside of our recreation requirements. So there is a requirement that whenever there's construction, subdivision, the trails on our trail master plan, that the onus is on the developer to install it. They don't get a rec credit for it in terms of the acreage requirement. The and I think the other component of that is that the idea of the in lieu fee is, again, to give Parks and Rec discretion to spend the money where it's needed. So that could result in new equipment at existing park or an existing facility. Could that be a trailhead, town trailhead? Yes, absolutely. That is a town, park, and rec facility. So the answer to your question is yes, it can be, an interlude fee can be applied in that manner. And I think, you know, it's, I hope I'm not stepping too out of turn. I think one thing that's important to keep in mind about that survey is, and I can only provide this anecdotally, it is noteworthy that that survey was taken during the height of the Vistoso Preserve concern. And so there was an enormous, and all the power to them, participation by Vistoso Preserve in that survey. So the ask for open space and trails, I think, was perhaps targeted in a good way in terms of a particular area. But a clear finding in the survey, a clear finding by the consultant that was presented to council was we have too many small parks in these subdivisions. How do we get larger, more meaningful ones? The town is should have more large parks. So in terms of our codes, what we're asking developers, how do we help get there? And so, you know, that premise is really directing our entire effort here. So hopefully that context helps a little bit.
Commissioner Posey.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. I really like the idea, those additional amenities. I think that is a great idea. And also the two HOAs sharing, you know, the recreational area. But the only thing with that, I'm wondering if it might be a potential problem about finances, like the upkeep and between the two HOAs. I just wondered if that might be a problem in the future.
From Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, that would just be something that, you know, the HOAs would have to work out. In the case of the Altera and Valley Vista, that was a requirement as part of the rezoning, was that shared park. Mr. Bell, do you have any additional insights into that?
That was definitely a case where one developer was required to build half the park. The other developer was required to build the other half. There was a master plan as far as how it all looked, and so they were able to pick up the pieces and implement those pieces. And both developers worked together to bring the Rancho Vistoso Master HOA into it in terms of long-term maintenance. There's certainly an option if that, you know, if there wasn't a Master HOA, say there are two individual HOAs, you could draw a line just like the developers did and said, hey, this is your side, this is our side. But thankfully, we were able to avoid that with the scenario because there was a master HOA. But that can be done, and it's a very good question. There's no doubt when you have two subdivisions sharing a rec area, it gets tricky in terms of working things out. But with enough patience and cool heads and good ideas, we can get there, and we've demonstrated we can get there. So hope that helps.
Thank you. Like I said, I believe it is a great idea. I just was curious about the money problem.
All right, Vice Chair Harrington.
Thank you, Chair Campbell. I got a question. Part of the presentation was we reached out to some of the developers, but it seemed like it was more towards the home, single-family homes versus the multi. Did the consultant speak to multi-family developers as well as single-family developers?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Harrington, there were a few multifamily developments that were included in the inventory for mini parks. For our research, we just included the single family developments, but the needs assessment master plan was largely focused on single family residential developments. If that answers your question.
And if I may add that, so we have been reaching out to the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association for input, and they do primarily represent single family. So we have not reached out to multifamily, certainly intend to do so. And I did want to emphasize that in terms of the proposed area requirement for multifamily, we're not making a change. It actually sounds like it's a big change, but I think, help me, Ms. Oden, please, the existing requirement is something like 35% of 50% of the area. It's an algorithm, and what it really means is 17% when you actually think it through. So there's no change to the area requirement. The big change is upping the game in terms of amenity requirements, in terms of quality. So,
is there calculations on amount of units or the size of the property?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Harrington. So for an apartment development, the recreation area is based on the size of the property. So again, it's 17% of the developable area.
Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble. Well, first of all, good presentation, good work. I have maybe a little more interest in this than maybe some of the other things that come before us, because my last job before I retired was as a planning director for a large park and rec district in Oregon. We served a population of about 200,000. So I have some expertise in parks and recreation stuff, but that wasn't my main focus as a planner. And I relied a lot on folks that had a lot more knowledge of it, like landscape architects and consultants. So I don't have a lot of comments to make on this, but I do have a couple. First of all, I would suggest that somehow consideration should be given to the recreation needs of the residents of the communities that these facilities would be serving. If this is it would be an age-limited community, 55 plus, for example, then you might factor that into the kinds of amenities that should be provided. Also, in terms of the half mile distance, walking distance to parks, you should factor in the kind of walking experience it is. If it's within a development, I assume it's all going to be within that development, but if for some reason people have to cross a major road or if there's not good sidewalks or not a good trail, then that should be factored in. You might have to require something closer. But again, you want to make it a good walking experience. Finally, I agree with Commissioner Sturman and his comments about turf and the amount of water needed to maintain turf. That's something that we need to factor in here. The other thing that I would suggest is that you need to give consideration to hard surfaces and how much heat they absorb. If you have a basketball court, for example, it'd be nice to paint it with something that's reflective so it doesn't heat up as much. Those are my comments at this point. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Bergsma. Commissioner Outlaw Ryan, did you have any comments or questions?
Not at this time. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you. I actually have a couple. So mine were mostly dealing with finding number four on the amenity requests. On the additional amenities, you have listed like a picnic table or a standalone play structure. I would love to have like some verbiage in there to say that those items should probably be shaded. I don't know if there was anything specific about the size of the shade requirements for play equipment, but as a mom of two boys, I don't feel like the shade requirements at some of the parks in Rancho Vistoso that I go to are large enough. I feel like sometimes at high noon, they're really great. But any time before and after that, you're still getting so much sun on the play equipment, it really heats it up, and it's just sometimes really unbearable. So I would love to see more shade, especially over those amenities. I also thought in terms of water conservation and turf, artificial turf has come so far. I would love to have like that, like, you know, think about this. Although that does get hot in the summer, it doesn't require water, and there are a lot of great options that will hold up. I've had turf in my backyard for 13 years, and it still looks brand new. So I think that could also be an option. And one of the things, I don't know if you guys have thought about this as an additional amenity, but I would love to start seeing some type of community garden where you have little garden beds that people can rent or, you know, grow vegetables in or flowers. I don't feel like Oro Valley has any type of community garden, and that's something that I love. Back home in Canada, where I'm from, they're kind of everywhere. And I would love to see more of those. So that would be one area where you would have to use water, but I think it could really be a great gathering space and amenity for those types of areas. And that was all of my comments. So was there, did anybody else have comments on the commission? No? All right. So I think we are done with this. There is no motion. Thank you so much, staff. I'm super excited about those changes. We will now move on to our planning update. Mr. Vella, is that you today? Awesome.
Thank you, and I certainly will understand if any commissioners want to interrupt me, because I've interrupted you so many times tonight, so please, you know, have at it. all kidding aside, in terms of, we've got, as you know, we've got quite a few upcoming neighborhood meetings, a lot of upcoming neighborhood meetings. You know, starting really in a few days' time, the 8th this week, we've got self-storage facility with RV storage in the Mercado del Rio Shopping Center, which is just over by Pishview Lane and Oracle. Then soon thereafter, on the 12th of September, there is a conditional use permit for another self-storage facility right at an area called Miller Ranch, which is northwest corner of Tangerine and La Cañada. Then going further into September, on the 22nd, we've got rezoning at Ranch Vistoso, northwest corner of Ranch Vistoso and Tangerine, for a single-family rental product by Avia. And then the 29th of September, neighborhood meeting for a Type 1 general plan amendment and rezoning for a 94-lot subdivision up in Stone Canyon. It is in the area, for those of you that have been around for some time, the old Ritz-Carlton site. Once upon a time, the Ritz was looking at Oro Valley, and that was a site designated for resorts. They're looking to do 94-lot subdivision. Single family, actually single family and duplexes. And then first of October, we'll have a type 2 general plan amendment and rezoning neighborhood meeting along the south of North Moore Loop and east of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard.
Sorry, what was the date on that?
So this is an odd location. So when you're going down Aerosmith in Ranch Vistoso toward Big Wash, you know how you hit a corner and you start looping over and going north? Right at that corner, there's a vacant piece of property that's on the edge of Big Wash, and it's currently zoned to accommodate schools. And so the owner wants to change the zoning to allow residential instead of a public or a charter school.
The date on that was that, did you say October 1st?
October 3rd, I'm sorry.
3rd, okay. I was like, that's
Saturday. I thought
Saturday.
You were asking me, where on earth is this? So my apologies.
The 3rd, got it.
All right, so you'll get a list, an email, as always, from Ms. Ancona for each one of these. You may have already noticed we've changed the format up for neighborhood meetings, so you can participate by Zoom as well as in person. So those are all being recorded and then posted afterwards, so you can also watch them at your leisure. if you have a scheduling conflict. So our next P&Z meeting, tentatively, we may have a Type 1 general plan amendment and rezoning. That's at Tangerine and La Cholla, which is at the southeast corner, ready to go. That may change, but we think that will be ready to go. If so, it'll be off-site. Per state law, one of your major general plan amendment hearings has to be off-site. So we're looking at perhaps booking the Cassis Church to be able to do that because it's near the subject parcel. There's also a public hearing for the proposed self-storage facility that I was describing over in Miller Ranch, just at La Cañada and Tangerine. Please, if you would, help spread the word. Community Academy is starting on October 6th, we've got classes running on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we're just starting to try to get the word out for folks to attend Community Academy. So I do want to very briefly applaud the planning team, particularly Ms. Oden as well as Ms. Sims, who are our leaders in garnering an award from the Arizona Planning Association, which we received last week, for adopting, for adopting procedures and standards as development occurs to make sure that saguaros are conserved, particularly the large saguaros. And what the effort really recognized is that Oro Valley is the first to get a handle on obtaining professional guidance in what works and what doesn't work relative to saguaro conservation over the long term. And Ms. Oden, as well as Ms. Sims, tapped into a lot of different resources, both national, local, and state, as well as professional biologists, ecologists, botanists, to develop standards. It was a very concentrated effort. And the APA recognized the town's efforts as a model for other Sonoran Desert communities to emulate. So it's definitely something that I'm certainly proud of, and I hope the town is proud of. And at the next commission meeting, I would like to, as an agenda item, if it's okay for the chairs, perhaps a study session. There's actually a video that goes a little deeper into what I'm talking about in terms of standards that we implemented and how they're used. So I wanted to present that to you guys. So thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Vella. Thank you, everyone, for being here. With that, I will ask for a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
Meeting adjourned. See you soon with all the neighborhood meetings.